All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Hey, and welcome to Veterans Radio. This is our special Memorial Day celebration 2025. We've got two stories for you today. We've got Joe Galloway from 2020, and we're going to be talking to Gary Lilly from 2008. He talks all about Arlington. So we're not going to run any ads or anything during today's program. We really want you to just sit back and enjoy and think about what Memorial Day really means to you. But we do have to thank our sponsors real quickly. So that's Legal Help for Veterans, the National Veterans Business Development Council, PuroClean, Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center, American Legion Post 46, and the Charles S. Kettles Chapter 310 of the Vietnam Veterans of America. So without further ado, we're going to get straight into our program. Here is Joe Galloway. We are back here on Veterans Radio today. It is Memorial Day weekend, and I can't think of a better guest to have on our program than Joe Galloway. And about his new book, They Were Soldiers, that he co-wrote with Marvin Wolfe. So Joe, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Nice to be back again.
It's nice to be anywhere, isn't it, sometimes?
It is that.
Well, I wanted to have you on the program when I saw this book, and I guess the idea is, where did you come up with the idea to talk about the sacrifices and contributions of Vietnam veterans?
Well, it's Marv Wolf and I have been friends for 55 years. I first met him, he was a Spec 4 photographer in the 1st Cav Division Public Affairs Office in Onkay in 1965, and we've been friends ever since. And he moved to North Carolina a couple of years ago. He lives about 2 hours' drive from me, and we got our heads together, and it's something both of us had been thinking about, and that is that so many Vietnam veterans came home to no welcome, no respect. The media, the movies portrayed Vietnam veterans as losers and Lieutenant Callies and a lot of bull like that. And it's just wrong. That's not who I saw in 4 tours in Vietnam from beginning of that war to the end of it. And we wanted to focus on 48 Vietnam veterans who, and not so much about the war they fought, but about the lives that they have lived and the good that they have done for their communities and our country since that war. They came home and did good stuff. And there are some famous people, and there's some people you never heard of but should have. But they are all successful, and they're all giving individuals, and there ain't a loser among them.
No, not at all. I was very excited when I first got the book, so I was able to go through this, and there are just amazing stories. You do mention in most of them a little bit about their experiences in Vietnam and some of them about their trials and tribulations of when they got home. But then the last half of almost all of the stories is about their successes. You know, there's so many talented people in here, and I know that you had a couple that you wanted to mention specifically, and I've got a couple I'm going to throw at you as we go along here of the 48. So let's start off with one that you wanted to mention. Let's talk about the Army nurse, Diane Carlson Evans. I thought hers was a great story.
It is a great story. She was a nice, innocent, young Midwestern farm girl. Got her nursing degree and went immediately and enlisted in the Army. Took a commission and said goodbye to her 4 brothers and her mom and dad on the farm and headed off to Vietnam. And, you know, they first assigned her to a MASH hospital in Vung Tau over on the coast, really a resort town. And she did that for a couple of months. But that wasn't what she was looking for. And so she volunteered to go to the evac hospital in Pleiku, Camp Holloway, and that was right smack in the middle of the 4th Division, the big meat grinder battles up in the Central Highlands, and she got all of the war she wanted and more. Hundreds of casualties pouring in, and she pulled her tour, and she went home, and she went home angry. She got home and found that she couldn't talk to anybody about what she had experienced. She tried to stay in the Army medical field, and that didn't work. She married an Army doctor, a surgeon, and they went home to Minnesota, and she started having kids. But behind it all was the PTSD of what she had been through. And more to the point is 1982 comes along, and they dedicate the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, the wall in Washington, and they put the three statues of the three GIs up at the end of it. And Diane says, where's the woman? You know, mm-hmm. We serve two, and we're ignored and left out of the whole deal. And that ain't right. So she thought she would start a campaign to create a women's memorial on the mall in D.C. And she thought it might take 2 years. It took 10. She had to fight her way through the Washington, D.C. bureaucracy, the Park Service, the Congress. There's art commissions and all kinds of people, and nobody wanted to help her except all of her fellow nurses, all of the women who served in Vietnam, who understood what she was all about. And eventually they got it done. Like I said, it took 10 years. And for the dedication of that women's memorial, they had a big veterans march down Constitution Avenue. And I remember that well because General Moore and I picked up the first cav guys and put them at the front of the parade where we thought they belonged. And,
you guys in the cab and drive me crazy.
We were leading them. And suddenly a little short red-headed lady came running out, got between us, grabbed each of us by a hand, and she said, "I'm from the 82nd Evac Hospital in Nha Trang. We treated all of your wounded that came out of the cav in the Iadrang Valley, and I want to march with you guys." And we were as proud of her as she was of the cav, and we all marched down, and then we could be proud of what Diane Carlson Evans had achieved with that magnificent statue of the two nurses and the wounded GI. And she's just a remarkable woman, and achieved so much. When there were times she thought about suicide, the PTSD was eating away at her, but this campaign gave her what she needed to get over that and get past that and do something good for America and for all of those military nurses who took such good care of all of our wounded, you know. And in four tours in Vietnam and half a dozen other wars, I've seen it all. I've seen the bodies stacked high as the roof in places like Bangladesh and the India-Pak War and other wars. But I could not do the job the military nurses do. I could not see that 12 hours a day, every day, month after month, destroyed bodies, the young men dying. How do you do that?
I don't know. We've had the privilege here on Veterans Radio of talking with a number of nurses from the Vietnam era, and each one of them talks about at some point in their tours, their emotion, they just shut down emotionally because they couldn't deal with it any longer. And, you know, all of us that were there.
It's amazing. And last year I spent a week doing video interviews of the veterans, the doctors, nurses, and techs from the 85th Evac Hospital in Nha Trang, who treated our wounded from the I Drang battles in 1965. And those stories are just etched in their minds and their hearts. One of them told me, you know, on one single day in that terrible November of 1965, we had 225 First Cav troopers wounded land on our doorstep in one day.
Yeah, people today, and you know, nurses and doctors and so forth today can understand that with the coronavirus going around, where you know people are coming into their hospitals by the tens and hundreds. And you can see when you look at you know, Diane and the other nurses, that of course it's going to take its toll on you. And I wanted to start off with her because I thought that was so important that we realize that what these nurses go through on a daily basis when they hold the hands of the, in this case of the young boys that were dying in Vietnam. And, you know, unfortunately today they're holding the hands of the people that are passing away from this virus.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to let's do Max Cleland. I had the honor of talking with Max a number of years ago, and this guy's tough.
He is a remarkable human being, one of my heroes, and I must tell you that you know, my co-author, the late Lieutenant General Hal Moore, is a very non-political guy all of his career. But there's only one exception to that. He stood on the steps of the Georgia State Capitol and endorsed Max Cleland for re-election to the U.S. Senate. And I cheered him on. Max, just a remarkable human being, you know. He lost both legs and one arm in a grenade explosion. He was a cab officer. He was arriving at Quezon when the cab went up to lend the Marines a hand with all of that stuff up there, and he was dismounting the helicopter, and somebody dropped a live grenade, and it got him bad. And you know, you lose three limbs, and you don't have much left, but what do you do then? You know, if you're Max Cleland, you go home and you get to work and you go into politics and you become the Secretary of State of Georgia, and then you achieve the highest goal of your life, sit in the U.S. Senate. And he did that. He did that, and, you know, he got done in by some dirty politics on his attempt to get a second term. And since then has worked as the executive director of the American Battlefield Commission, which takes care of our military cemeteries all around the world.
Oh, yeah, he's an incredible guy. I mean, you know, and the idea that people attacked him because he, quote, wasn't wounded enough was just disgusting. And it's always so upsetting.
It was draft dodging ass who were attacking him for wounded enough.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, you know, that happens. So let's move along. How about, I want to talk about your wife. Tell me a little bit about
her. Happy to do that.
I figured you would be.
Well, Doc Gracie is a truly remarkable human being, best thing that ever happened to me. They say third time's charm, and she's wife number three, and we've been together. Well, I met her 50 years ago in Indonesia. Should have married her then, and kept track of her until about 30 years ago, and saw her in D.C., and then she disappeared. She turned up 9 years ago, and I said, "Where the hell have you been?" And she said, "Well, I took my 8-year-old daughter and ran away and joined the circus." And I said, "What?" And, yeah, she had signed on as a traveling nurse with Barnum and Bailey. And a year later, she and her little daughter were aerialists in the trapeze act in the Big Top. And she did that for 10 years. And then she came back and got her nurse practitioner degree and license. And then she got a PhD in public health. And she turned back up, and I said, "Well, you're not getting away this time. I'm going to marry you." She's Singapore Chinese, now an American citizen, of course, but she was a first cousin of the old Singapore Prime Minister Lee Kuan Yew, who founded modern Singapore and made it run like a Swiss watch. And she's nobody to mess with. She still works every day at the Community Free Clinic here in Concord. She doctors people who have no insurance, people who are poor, people who are homeless, and a not inconsiderable number of homeless veterans who camp out in the woods behind the Harris Teeter grocery store. And if they're too spooked to come to the clinic, she takes her black bag and goes out in the woods and treats them out there.
My goodness. I wanted to bring her up because she was actually in Vietnam during the Tet Offensive.
She was indeed, and was working with the street kids and war orphans in Saigon, and a relative had a big house in Cholon, the Chinese section of Saigon, and that house was burned down. So she went through some tough times.
That's what I wanted. I wanted to get to that. Now she continued on, and you know, just wanted to be a nurse, and that's what she's been doing forever.
That's what she's been doing forever, and she's going to keep doing it as long as she's drawing a breath. She can't
imagine retiring.
It's great
that there are people out there, and you're lucky that you found her again.
Oh, absolutely. She says she's going to get another 15 years out of me.
We can only hope, Joe. We need you around here. We're talking with Joe Galloway here on Veterans Radio, and the name of his newest book is They Were Soldiers. It talks about the sacrifices and the contributions of Vietnam veterans, and there are so many names in here. Some of you will that many of you will recognize some of them. So many people in this book that, you know, we can't get to all of them today. We're talking with Joe Galloway. His new book is They Were Soldiers. It's about the sacrifices and contributions of Vietnam veterans.
We've got a lot of people here to be proud of as fellow Vietnam veterans, and we just wanted to put their stories out there for Americans to read and understand who we are. And I've for years been making speeches to veterans groups and active duty military. And what I say is the Vietnam cohort may not be the greatest generation, as they said of the World War II guys, but by God, they're the greatest of their generation.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think if you stack them up against the greatest generation, if you put them all in the same situation, they would all react the same way.
You got it. You got it.
I think that's what people have to really remember. The book is They Were Soldiers, the Sacrifices, Contributions of Vietnam Veterans. I encourage you to go out and get a hold of this. There are so many names in here that you're going to recognize. Bill Galloway, I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio again.
My pleasure, and we'll do it again sometime.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, good morning, Gary. Thanks for having me on this morning, and we hope that you guys are enjoying the Memorial Day weekend, and hopefully that all of your listeners are celebrating Memorial Day as it should be, remembering those who've come before us and who've served. But again, as you mentioned, my name is Michael Patterson. I'm the web's master and originator of the Arlington National Cemetery website, which is my own personal website. It doesn't belong to the government or to the Army. I do it as a gift to America, if you will.
They have their own website, which is very, is it the identical name, only .org? Or
yeah, yes, it is, Gary.
Tell us what your website is before we get
ours is www.arlingtoncemetery.net and also arlingtoncemetery.com.
Michael, you started off with a very small website, correct?
Well, I did, Gary. Back in 1996, we started off with a very humble, very small 10-page website.
And how large is it now?
It's now running about 35,000 pages.
I don't think I could go through it in my lifetime. I don't know how you found time to do it. But tell us, you got interested in it because your dad was in the military. You're now retired, so he was in World War II, Korea, and the start of Vietnam. Is that correct?
Yes, he was. And he retired in 1965. He was a lifetime military officer. And through that, you know, I gained a lot of interest in military history and American history for sure. And, you know, because of his affiliation with the military, we had been down in the D.C. area a number of times. And, of course, you know, when you visit Washington, D.C., you know, the metro area, Arlington National Cemetery is certainly a place that one needs to visit.
That's such a solemn spot. And every time I walk through there, it just hits me. I look at these tombstones and I think, the stories here, the stories that have never been told, it's sacred to me. How large is Arlington?
Arlington Cemetery right now is 660 acres. The good news is that there's been some additional property ceded to Arlington from adjoining military organizations, so we'll be adding about 80 acres to the cemetery, which will keep it alive certainly beyond, 2060. Is an active cemetery.
And how many are buried there?
Well, right now there's pushing around 300,000.
How much more room will they have? How many more can it take?
Well, again, at the present burial rate, which is around between 27 and 30 a day, they'll be able to continue right up until 2060. It's estimated at this point.
Who qualifies to be buried there?
Well, it's the criteria there has become very restricted following President Kennedy being buried there. Arlington became a very popular burial site, as you could imagine. So Congress passed some very severe restrictions following that time. Right now, anyone who dies on active duty, of course, is eligible. Retired military who are receiving retirement pay from the military are eligible, and certain other persons who receive certain military honors. Of course, Medal of Honor recipients, Silver Star recipients, and of course, Purple Heart recipients are immediately eligible. But there are all sorts of other criteria. We do have that on the website. It goes on and on for several pages because there are some exceptions, of course.
So if somebody wants to know whether or not they or a loved one qualifies, they can go to your website.
Absolutely, they can.
Okay, terrific. What a service. How did Arlington get started and when?
Well, it was a very interesting story. It actually, Arlington, as you probably know, was in the family of Robert E. Lee, who became the Confederate general. But in 1862, after the Civil War had started, the United States Congress passed a tax act against the states that were in rebellion, the southern states. And if those taxes weren't paid, certain properties were seized, and one of those was the Arlington estate. And they filed suit against the Arlington estate in the amount of $92.07 in taxes plus penalties. And, of course, General Lee could not pass over the line to pay the taxes, so the United States government seized the property in 1862 for what they categorized as war, military, charitable, and educational purposes. And it didn't become a cemetery until 1864, when Brigadier General Montgomery Meigs, who was the Quartermaster General of the Union Army at that time, and who was a person who harbored a strong jealousy for Robert E. Lee for turning against the Union and joining the Confederacy, recommended to President Lincoln that they establish a cemetery on the grounds, you know, principally to provide additional burial space, but secondarily to prevent General Lee or his family from ever living in the estate again. And actually, before the cemetery was actually established in June 1864, on May 13, 1864, the first burial took place, who was a Private William Chrisman from a Pennsylvania infantry regiment who had died in a Washington hospital.
That's amazing to me that you would know, or that history would know, the very first person to be buried at Arlington. I'd have never guessed we would know that. And were the Union soldiers buried close to the mansion, did I understand?
Yes, they were. They were buried in what was Mrs. Lee's Rose Garden, right near the mansion. And Meigs, General Meigs, who we mentioned before, actually personally supervised it because he wanted them buried so close to the mansion that it would never become a private home again.
True. Tell us the connection or the history of Mrs. Lee.
Well, Mrs. Lee actually owned the property. It wasn't actually General Lee's property. Her father, George Washington Park Custis, was the adopted son of George Washington, which many people don't know. When he died, the property went to Mrs. Lee, and she and raised her family there for many, many years while her husband was in the United States Army serving out west. He came back to the property at some point in time after George Washington Park Custis died, and he's actually buried with his wife on the property. So they were actually the first burials, although they were civilians. They were buried on the estate well before it was a cemetery. And
now the mansion is still there.
Yes, it is. It's called Arlington House, or it's sometimes called the Custis Lee Mansion.
And what do you see when you're standing there, and what is the house used for now?
It's used now as it's now called the Robert E. Lee National Memorial, and it's been restored to the way it looked in the 1860s. It has much of the original furniture in it, and it's a very beautiful home.
And when you stand on the porch, you look out over.
Well, immediately if you look out, you can look down, and right down the hill from that is the John F. Kennedy burial site, the Robert F. Kennedy burial site, and right in the front yard is where General Phil Sheridan from the Civil War is buried.
And then you look out and you see the graves, and then in the distance you see the Potomac. And
you see the Potomac, and you can see Washington, D.C. off in the distance.
And off to the right would be the Pentagon.
Yes, absolutely. And you can see the U.S. Capitol. You can see the Washington Monument. It's just an absolutely beautiful sight.
It's stunning. I've been there, and I've wandered around. When you wander around, you see a lot of monuments, you see a lot of plaques of dedication. Can you tell us about that, and tell us who qualifies to be able to put a plaque there?
Well, many, many very groups, military groups principally, obviously, of course, have applied to Arlington and over the years to have plaques placed in memory of their groups. There are very groups such as the Navy Seabees, of course, have a monument right outside the gates of Arlington on Memorial Drive.
And one that but, I'm near and dear to my heart.
I knew it would be. Large. That's why I wanted to mention that, Gary, because I know that that's very close to you. But again, there are literally hundreds, if I wouldn't say thousands, but there are many hundred memorials that have been placed by various military and veterans groups throughout the cemetery. And they're anything from trees with plaques below them to very large memorials. There's going back into the late 1890s, early 1900s, there's the Spanish-American War Memorial. There's the Rough Riders Memorial. And then, of course, the largest one in the cemetery is the USS Maine Memorial. which was established, you know, from the USS Maine being sunk in Havana Harbor, which started the Spanish-American War. And in the early 1900s, the mast of the USS Maine was brought to Arlington and placed above the graves of many of the sailors that were lost above on the USS Maine.
Do I remember hearing something about the remains of people being in that mast, or is it another monument that I'm thinking
of? No, you're absolutely correct. Over the years, Manuel Quezon, who was the president of the Philippines during World War II, was in exile in Washington and died in Washington. And his body was kept in the base of the USS Maine until the war was over, and eventually his body was returned to the Philippines. Another interesting thing is Ignace Jan Paderewski, the president of Poland, at the beginning of World War II, died in the United States in 1941, and he laid in state in the base of the USS Maine until the administration of the first President Bush, when his body was finally returned to Poland once Poland was declared free again.
That was something that caught me by surprise, is that there are different people from different nationalities. The person that you mentioned, that is not the same person that there's a statue in Detroit. I think the person in Detroit was a Revolutionary War general. Is that correct?
Yes, but he was not in Arlington.
Okay.
But, you know, once you've mentioned it, there are just numbers of foreign persons who are buried in Arlington. It sometimes surprises a lot of folks. The most recent one, of course, was an Iraqi Air Force captain who was killed on a mission with several American military people. And their remains could not be individually identified because they were killed in a plane crash. He is buried in Section 60, where most of the casualties from Iraq are buried. And his name is Ali Hassam Abbas Arubai, and he was, again, an Iraqi Air Force captain.
In fact, there's a number of graves, are there not, where there are more than one person because of the way the casualty took place? There was no separating them? Is that correct?
Absolutely. There are very many group burials at Arlington. And again, most of them, or a lot of them, result from World War II. And they're still finding, you know, remains of World War II casualties, mostly from aircraft accidents and shootdowns, a lot of them from New Guinea, you know, as late as just this year, where they're finding aircrew remains, and they're burying them as a group burial in Arlington.
Who's getting buried the most right now? Is it veterans or is it active duty?
Well, right now it's veterans, for sure, because we're losing so many of our World War II veterans, and they certainly were, as Tom Brokaw wrote in his book, The Greatest Generation, and we're losing them at an alarming rate. That will, I think, continue to be the case because of the way we're losing them, and they're aging out on us, and we're losing so many of them that if you look at the roster of the funerals taking place every day, that's we're losing the veterans.
We're, as a matter of fact, it surprises many people to know that per capita, Vietnam vets are dying at just about the double the rate per capita as World War II vets.
Yes, they are, and obviously at a much younger age.
Right. I keep looking at the clock, the calendar every day and checking my time.
Don't do that, Gary. We need you to continue on with this fine program.
This program keeps me going, believe it or not. Any rate, you get a lot of visitors. How many visitors a year do you get at Arlington?
About 4 million people a year visit through there, and it's one of it's the most visited cemetery in America, probably in the world. And you know, when you've been down there a number of times, right. And I'm there quite frequently, and it varies from school groups to veterans groups to. I was just down there 2 weeks ago, and they had police officers from all over the country that were in for the Police Officers Memorial, which is held in Washington, D.C. annually. And they were just thousands of police officers in the district. And most of those groups came to Arlington, and they were all in their uniforms, and they had all come to the Tomb of the Unknowns to witness the changing of the guard by the 3rd Infantry Division, which is the old guard.
And when we come back, we're going to be, in the third segment, we're going to be talking about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And in the next segment, I want you to take us through a funeral and how it takes place there at Arlington Cemetery. We're talking to Michael Patterson on Veterans Radio. Michael Patterson maintains his own private website on Arlington National Cemetery, and it's arlingtoncemetery.net and arlingtoncemetery.com. The time is roaring past. We're going into our first break. We'll be right back on Veterans Radio. We're with Michael Patterson on... I got a little scattered there because I'm looking at my notes, and I wanted to have you take me through a funeral that takes place. And I'm looking at the names James Linton Heward, who is someone I knew from Dearborn, Michigan, back in the teenage days prior to the service. James Linton Heward was an F-4 pilot who went down on July 12, 1972, up in the north, and then his remains were found and returned, and he was buried in 1997. Very, very emotional day, and I was thinking about that, and I was getting a little bit emotional about it again. Michael Patterson, take us through the burial at one of those at Arlington Cemetery, and I'm going to let you talk till I get my thoughts together.
That's okay, Gary. I can understand. You know, when you attend a funeral at Arlington Cemetery, it's unlike anything that you'll ever experience. There are two types of funeral services that take place there. The most common one is called Standard Military Honors, and that's available to any enlisted service member or any officer. And that consists of a six-man body bearer detail, a firing party which fires a three-rifle volley, and that's sometimes confused with a 21-gun salute, which it's not. There's a bugler to play taps, and then there's, of course, a chaplain from the deceased military service. The body bearers carry the flag-draped casket to the grave, hold the flag over the casket while the chaplain says some appropriate words, and then following the committal service, the firing party is called to attention, fires the three-rifle volley, and then the bugler plays taps, which, to my mind, is just always just awesome. It just makes the hair stand up on your back of your neck. The body bearers fold the flag, and then that's presented to the next of kin by the officer that's conducting the services. Now, on the other hand, Arlington's the only cemetery in the world that offers on a regular basis a full military honors funeral, available at the family's request to officers and warrant officers. Now, a full honors service consists of a procession to the gravesite with a horse-drawn caisson, a marching band, a marching escort of troops, a four-man color guard. The chaplain joins the procession as well in front of the caisson and behind the escort band and color guard. Once at the gravesite, the service is pretty much identical to the standard services, with the exception that the band plays while the casket is taken to the grave and the flag's being folded. It's just an absolutely breathtaking and emotional and absolutely symbolic farewell to an American fighting man. The interesting thing that happens at Arlington as well, and people of our era may remember this from John F. Kennedy's funeral, is the riderless horse. And that is for officers who are a colonel or above, where the riderless horse follows the caisson. And that's is called the Capron horse, and it's a horse with no rider, of course, and the boots are reversed in the stirrups, you know, which means that the rider will no longer ride his horse. And when you see that happen at Arlington, it absolutely takes your breath away.
That was the funeral type of funeral they had for Jim Heward.
Absolutely.
When I'm the Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310. Representative at the Vietnam Veterans of America Michigan State Council, where we get the committee reports, one of them always being the POW-MIA report. And it hit me like a bolt of lightning. I was taking the notes when the man was giving his report, and he said the remains of James Linton Heward from Dearborn, Michigan have been returned, and my head snapped back, I know, and my eyes filled with tears, and I was continued to take the notes, although I had a hard time seeing the paper, and tears were dropping on the paper. And then the funeral took place at Arlington. A good friend and I drove out there, And there's first the chapel where they have the service, and Jim's sons were there, and one of them was played on the little baby grand piano inside the chapel. And what I remember is he played How Great Thou Art, and it was so stirring. The way he played it, I'd never heard it like that before, and the hair stands up just thinking about it. And when they carried Jim out and put him on the caisson, and riderless horse, and then the band and the color guard, one of them carrying the MIA flag. There were a lot of Vietnam vets from Dearborn, Michigan, went out there, my friend and I amongst them. And as we walked, I don't know if it was a half mile or three quarters of a mile, winding through the cemetery, gradually the Vietnam vets stopped talking. They were in groups, fell into columns of two, fell into step, and then silently marched. And I just looked around and I said to my friend, I am so proud to be a part of this small band of brothers, this small elite group. And as we walked looking at these rows of crosses, it was very emotional. Later on, they had at the cemetery, at the gravesite itself, the Air Force flew the missing man formation. The four planes come flying over and one peels off before it hits the Arlington. And so only the three fly over in the missing man formation. Is the missing man formation something that you see very often there?
Yes, you do, because, you know, most of the Marine aviators, Naval aviators, Air Force aviators, who are combat aviators, their families request that quite frequently, and it is absolutely, Gary, a stirring, stirring thing to see. And it's played out so well, because you can imagine that it has to happen with such technical preciseness the way it happens during the course of the funeral, but it just absolutely takes your breath away.
And for the 4 million visitors that are visiting when that type of a funeral takes place, it's worth the admission. And there's no price of admission. This is a free visit, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this cemetery belongs to the American people, as does my website. I mean, this is an American tradition. This is a national cemetery. It belongs to you. It belongs to me. It belongs to all of those 4 million people who come and visit, and it belongs to the millions of people who come and visit it on the website every year.
I can't recommend your website enough. There is so much in there, historical photographs, everything from the how do I do it, who qualifies, to the stories of the people, and it's just amazing. I spent hours browsing through it, getting ready for the show. And speaking of that, this segment is almost over. You're listening to Michael Patterson, who has the most astounding website on Arlington National Cemetery. We'll give that address again coming out of this next break. In the next break, Michael, we're going to be talking about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, the Old Guard, and I'd like you to give us some of the history of that wreath laying. I was honored to lay a wreath one Memorial Day. We're with Michael Patterson talking about the Arlington National Cemetery. He's got the fabulous website on it. We'll repeat it again later. Right now, I'd like to have you tell us about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, the Old Guard, the changing of the guard. Give us a bit of a history on that, if you would, please.
I'd be glad to, Gary. Well, you know, the Tomb of the Unknowns is the second most visited place in Arlington National Cemetery. Most of the visitors who come go immediately to John F. Kennedy's gravesite, but the place to me, the center point of the cemetery, is the Tomb of the Unknowns. It was established in 1921. When a unknown from World War One was selected and interred, you know, right behind the Memorial Amphitheater at Arlington. In 1958, he was joined by unknowns from World War Two and Korea. And then in 1998, there was a Vietnam unknown chosen. And I mentioned that because I know that that's near and dear to your heart. And eventually, the Vietnam unknown was identified and removed from the tomb, and that was Air Force First Lieutenant Michael Joseph Blassie, and they were able to identify him through mitochondrial DNA, and at his family's request, he was removed, and he was brought home to Jefferson Barracks National Cemetery near his home in Missouri, and he was certainly an American hero as well, but, you know, he was brought back to his home, but the Tomb of the Unknowns has been guarded 24 hours a day, 365 days a year by the 3rd United States Infantry, who is commonly referred to as the Old Guard. They earned that name in the Mexican War back in the 1800s by the way that they participated in that war. They are the oldest continuous military organization in the United States Army, and they are the only military unit that's authorized to have bayonets on their rifles at all times. But these are guys who are specially trained, obviously. They are the honor guard of the United States Army.
How are they selected?
They are selected on military bearing, on intelligence, on dedication to duty. There's height and weight restrictions. They have to have a 28-inch waist, for instance, which I haven't seen since I think I was 10 years old. But these guys are out there 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, in rain, in snow, in horrible weather, in heat.
I understand that during a storm a few years ago, a blizzard that was so bad, they were authorized to not do their guarding and turned it down, and they stayed out there anyway?
Yes, they do. If you've been there, Gary, and I know you have, there's a little booth off to the side.
Right.
And when the snow piles up, they will retreat to that booth and stay at attention while the area that they march on is cleaned, and then they resume their march. They are the most dedicated, wonderful young men and women. There have been 3 tomb guards who are females that you'll ever know. And as far as the tomb itself, it's having some issues right now because of some cracks that have formed. And there are discussions underway whether the tomb should be replaced, at least the cap, the top of it that we're all familiar with,
right. Or
whether it should be repaired. And there have been issues over the years where it has been attempted to repair it.
I'm glad they're not just jumping into it and doing something that they're...
I'm glad they're not either. Congress is stuck their hand into it and said, listen, let's sit back and let's research this a little bit.
Well,
but I think there's a couple of very poignant things about the tomb, and one is the inscription which sits on the front of it, which I think is pretty familiar to all of our veterans friends out there, and it says merely, here rests an honored, glory, an American soldier known but to God. And that is the truth. I mean, this is simply an American soldier. And, you know, whether... Like yourself, if you're a CB or you're a sailor or a Marine or a Coast Guardsman or an airman, you know, to be called an American soldier is certainly something that you can be proud of.
Oh.
And if I could, just for a second, I'd like to read to you the Sentinel's Creed, if I could.
Please do.
And it says, my dedication to this sacred duty is total and wholehearted. In the responsibility bestowed on me, never will I falter. With the dignity and perseverance, my standard will remain perfection. Through the years of diligence and praise and the discomfort of the elements, I will walk my tour in humble reverence to the best of my ability. It is he who commands the respect I protect, his bravery that made us so proud. Surrounded by well-meaning crowds by day, alone in the thoughtful peace of night, this soldier will in honored glory rest under my eternal vigilance. And let me tell you what, these guys take that so seriously.
And this is an oath they all take.
They all take. And one of the most cherished awards that as an Army soldier you can earn is the Honor Guard badge. And, you know, you have to pass some very stringent requirements to earn that. And not even all of the old guard guys who guard the tomb earn that. And
you have to be outstanding amongst the outstanding.
You absolutely have to be. And once you earn that, you can wear that on your uniform no matter where you go or whatever assignment you go to after you've served at the tomb. It's very special.
If you folks out there have not seen the changing of the guard at Arlington National Cemetery, that's something that you must do before you leave this planet Earth. The people there, you look at these young people and you say, this country is good. This country is good. I don't care what anybody says.
Well, if I could throw sort of a semi-political thing in, you know, from what Michelle Obama said, how could you look at that and not be proud to be an American?
Impossible.
Impossible indeed.
And so the when it comes to laying the wreath, who is qualified to lay the wreath? We've got, just a little over a minute left.
Well, you know, obviously any military group, veterans groups, on the website I have a link where you can get information on that. You can write in on your group's letterhead and, you know, request a date. But, you know, you should request a couple of dates because, you know, it is quite a popular thing. But you'll send into to the cemetery. There's people who handle requests and do the scheduling.
And that's on your website, correct?
It absolutely is. There's a link right to it on the front page.
As I mentioned earlier, that my Vietnam Veterans of America chapter, one of the members wrote in, requested that, and as the president that year, I had the honor of laying the wreath. Now we've come to the end of the show, Michael. I can't believe it.
And I can't either, Gary. It's been really a pleasure.
Thank you so much for being on. We want to thank you for listening in on Veterans Radio.
All right. Some of you may be familiar with that tune. That is the song Arlington, and we're going to go out on that today. But I did want to just remind everybody that Memorial Day is to remember those men and women who did pay the ultimate price during their time in service. And so I did want to mention this little comment that someone sent me today that said that this Memorial Day, we remember those who sacrificed their lives for our freedom. Our thoughts and prayers are with all of those who are grieving. May we, as Abraham Lincoln said at Gettysburg, highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from this earth. And so we're going to end up playing the song Arlington by Trace Adkins. And I want to thank everybody for listening today. If you like the program, please send us a comment. Let us know exactly what you thought of the program, what you would like us to cover in the future. I think that that's what's really important to you. So we will go now to that song, and we'll play the song, and then we're going to end up with Taps. So until next week, you are dismissed.
Never thought that this is where I'd settle down. I thought I'd die an old man back in my hometown. They gave me this plot of land, me and some other men, for a job well done. There's a big white house, sits on a hill just up the road. Man inside, he cried the day they brought me home. They folded up a flag and told my mom and dad, we're proud of your son. And I'm proud to be on this peaceful piece of property. I'm on sacred ground and I'm in the best company. I'm thankful for those, thankful for the things I've done. I can rest in peace, I'm one of the chosen ones. I made it to Arlington. I remember Daddy brought me here when I was 8. We searched all day to find out where my granddad lay. When we finally found that cross, he said, son, this is what it cost to keep us free. Now here I am, 1,000 stones away from him. He recognized me on the first day I came in, and it gave me a chill when he clicked his heels and saluted me. And I'm proud to be on this peaceful piece of property. I'm on sacred ground and I'm in the best of company. And I'm thankful for those, thankful for the things I've gone. I can rest in peace. I'm one of the chosen ones. I made it to Arlington. And every time I hear 21 guns, I know they brought another hero home to us. Thankful for the things we've done. We can rest in peace, 'cause we are the chosen ones. We made it to Arlington. Yeah, dust to dust, don't cry for us. We made it to Arlington.